fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Today we're going to talk about something a little bit different, but maybe more scary, more disturbing than any ghost story. And that is the subject of American cults, cabals, corruption, and charismatic leaders. And our guest is Jim Willis. And we've been so glad to have him on our various shows over the years and to talk about this subject. Jim earned his master's degree in theology from Andover Newton Theological School, and he's been an ordained minister for over 40 years. He has also taught college courses in comparative religion and cross-cultural studies. His background in theology and education led to his writing more than 20 different books on various topics: history, religion, the apocalypse, cross-cultural spirituality, and the mysteries of the unknown. His books include Visible Ink Press's Censoring God, Hidden History, and Lost Civilizations. And he lives in the woods of South Carolina, and we're so glad to have him on the show today to talk about American cults, cabals, corruption, and charismatic leaders. Sir, good to talk to you again, even though the topic is by no means pleasant.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Jim, I do a lot of interviews and a lot of podcasts, but whenever I talk to you, I feel like I'm coming home. So if there was anyone I could talk to about an unpleasant subject that affects so many lives, it would be you. So I'm glad to be with you, glad to have this conversation.
Now, let me ask you this question. I mean, growing up, I was a kid mainly of the late 70s and 80s. The first exposure that I had to the idea of cults was Jim Jones in Jonestown and that horrible mass suicide that happened in Guyana. Yeah. But I guess cults go back way before that, no?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, even in Christianity, it's very common for Christian theologians to talk about the very early days, first really 2-3 centuries of the church, and they call it a Jesus cult embedded within Judaism. And that's really what it was for the first 100 years anyway of its existence. It was a group of people who were considered a cult. And there's an old mathematical formula in theology that says cult plus time equals religion. And it's amazing how many accepted religions today are no longer called cults, but when they began, that's what they were called. That's how they started out. And so you never know. I suppose some cults can, in effect, straighten up. Some don't. And it's a terrible thing, but it goes back a long, long way in history.
Now, it strikes me that we kind of have a certain perception of a cult, an organization that's self-insulating, and, many times you're held to a certain, you may live with the cult, those kind of things where you kind of spirited away and you're off by yourself. But it strikes me that maybe many of us have been or could be in cults and not even know it. What are the telltale signs of actually being in a cult?
Yeah, that's the scary thing. And that's what I've been having the most backlash about. People say, you seem to say I'm in a cult, and they mention whatever it is. I may have mentioned it in the book. And I never did mention it, but that's how they respond, because they begin to, I think there's a deep-seated worry that most people don't want to say, could this be a cult? So I don't like to say this is a cult or that is a cult, but what I like to do instead is to look at cults and their methodology. And then I can say, if you're involved in a group that is using some of these methods, I'm not saying you're involved in a cult, but I am saying be careful. The number one cult's methodology, or the thing that points to a cult probably more than anything else, is a certain charismatic type leader. They often start just as regular, normal people. Jim Jones, you mentioned that whole Guyana thing. He started out as a typical fundamentalist, we would call today probably evangelical, church leader,
right.
A little church on a corner. And he just kept growing, and he kept getting more followers. And pretty soon the denomination that he was involved in began to worry about him. And so they said to the church, you can't have this guy as your sole pastor anymore. He's leading you astray. He's leading you away. And the people wanted him. He was the charismatic leader was more important than what the charismatic leader was talking about. The message got lost. And so they just followed the leader, and he could do no wrong. And the more power he got, the more powerful he became. Jim Jones, for instance, when he was starting out, he went to see Father Divine, who many people said at the beginning of his ministry that this was a cult, the peace cult. Now it has outgrown those the labels a little bit. But he went to see Father Divine, and because he wanted help. How do I run this thing? What kind of a leader do I have to be? And when they were just about ready to finish their discussion, Jim Jones said to Father Divine, I have this problem. Some of the female members of my group are igniting certain passions within me, or certain feelings within me that I feel probably must be wrong. Father Divine looked at him and smiled and said, it's best to bring those passions to the surface where you can deal with them. In other words, he was giving Jim Jones permission to have these kinds of relationships in the idea of bringing it to the surface. And then after a while, Jones started saying, it isn't me who's got the problem. It's the women. So what I have to do is have them deal with it by bringing their passions out to the surface and showing them. And a typical cult response. We've all heard the saying, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And step by step, inevitable by step, you can follow yourself down the primrose path that leads from a bona fide beginning to a cult. And it almost invariably involves the cult leader, who is at best narcissistic, and at worst, I think they can grow into becoming an actual psychopath. A narcissist is thinking that the whole world revolves around him, and I say the word him because most cult leaders are men. There are a few women that I talk about in the book, but most cult leaders are men, and there is a narcissism that begins to say, I'm going to surround myself with people who think just like me, who have come up in the ranks. And it becomes a pyramid kind of thing, a layered organization where the cult leader only trusts the people that he has personally trained. And they grow into a kind of a hierarchy. And when narcissism passes into pathology, when the narcissist becomes an actual pathologist, that's the dangerous part. A lot of people don't realize that people who are involved in being a psychopath can actually pass lie detector tests. They really believe,
right?
That they can do no wrong. They're telling the truth. They really believe it, because if they're saying it, it must be true. And as that begins to grow, this strange human dynamic enters the fray, and that. In one sense, you can almost divide the human race into two kinds of people: the kind of people who want the power and who want the undivided attention of their devotees, and the other group that finds life so complicated, finds life so difficult, they just want someone to give them answers. I'll say, yeah, tell me what to do. Put it on a bumper sticker. I'll do it. You know,
right?
And when that comes together, almost a surefire recipe for forming a cult.
Now, I don't believe I was ever in a cult, but I do think I was involved at a church that exhibited some cultish behavior. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
And it was more of kind of the fundamentalist evangelical. When I was a teenager, my parents sent me to a local school that was a church school. And I started going to church there. And still, you know, like some of those people very much, but some of the things were cultish. I'll give you an example. I was completing a school assignment, and the questions were always very leading, like basically drawing to this one conclusion and wanting to parrot back this one answer. And I remember because actually I was a pretty good writer for my age and things. And I said, well, certainly this is, I gave them the answer they wanted. And then I said something like, of course, this is one way of interpreting the Bible.
Oh.
And I got big marks. There is only one way to interpret the Bible.
Yeah.
And the thing was, is that, you know, it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy in the sense that I say it is because I say it is.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. And then it's self-insulating in the sense of if you disagree with it or you question it, well, of course, that's Satan. You know, and I don't believe that the pastor was a psychopath. I certainly think he was set in his ways. So I don't think it's to that extreme, but there were some of these kind of little cultish kind of things that I recognized, I think, even then.
Yeah, yeah. And Jim, you just put your finger right on something that troubles me and troubles me deeply. Let's take a typical cult meeting where they're meeting for the purpose of recruiting new members. And this may be a political party. It may be an economic situation, you know, buy this starter kit, practice this, and earn a lot of money. It may be a religious organization. And the steps to get into the meeting and to get styled and to get involved are usually the same. You park your car, you know, a friend calls you up because he knows you're having troubles, let's say financially. And he said, there's this group that I'm involved with that can solve your financial problems. It can make you an independent business person, and they have all the answers, and just follow this group and you'll be fine. Come with me. We're having a meeting at such and such a hotel. So you go with your friend, and you park out in the parking lot, and immediately people come up to you and they start shaking your hand and they start saying things like, oh, it's great to have you here.
Love bombing.
This is going to be wonderful. Yeah, yeah. And you go inside and the music is blasting and everybody's happy and everybody's kind of dancing and talking. And then they get a couple of testimonies up there where I did this. I started out with nothing in my wallet. Now I got $1 million and I'm driving a pink Cadillac or something like that. You know, everything is wonderful. And then as the meeting comes in, they said, now all you have to do is buy this starter kit. This will be the answer to your questions. So you say, great, I'll buy the kit. Give them the money. And then the main speaker comes on, who is often the founder or somebody that's trained by the founder. And they give this great inspirational speech. And you walk out of that place a different person. You've been changed. Oh, your life is going to be different. And so you get out and you sell some product to maybe neighbors, family, and it doesn't do anything. You're not gaining anything. And so you begin to say, well, must be me. What did I do wrong? And so your friend calls and says, well, you're in luck because we've got another meeting coming up next week, which is for the next level. And so you go and the same thing happens and you're just jazzed up again and everything is great. And like I say, there's always the music, the friendly people, the handshakes. These are people who you can trust. And when your life is falling apart, they say, well, maybe it's falling apart because you're spending too much time with your family or your old friends.
Yes.
And they're dragging you down.
The uneven yoke.
Get away from them, you know? And now, you know, that's typical cult methodology. It's very common. You find them in political rallies. You find them in churches a lot. And that's where my problem comes, because as a pastor, I have to admit, much to my shame, I have used some of these techniques without realizing it. I encourage my congregation, when you see a visitor out in the parking lot, go visit them, bring them in, sit with them. You know, and when they come in, the music is playing and it's designed, whether it's either, you know, classical formal music or whether it's foot stomping praise bands and all this kind of thing, you know, it gets people going and people are singing and it makes people feel like I've come home. I've got a group of friends. And when they start to say, boy, I'm so much more comfortable here than I am talking to my family because my family is a bunch of atheists, you know, well then, You got to put them behind. Come with us. Those are all cult methods, and I've used them. I didn't mean to, but that's what churches do, and it scared me. And I don't know what I could have done different, because all churches in some way use that thing. All political parties use the same thing. There's a certain playlist of music that's
sure
played until the person comes along, and the talented stuff and the people are friendly. Those are all cult methods, and I don't know. I'm kind of ashamed of myself, but I don't know what I could have done different.
But isn't it a question of intent?
That's where I think it comes down. I think you put your finger right on the button. I certainly didn't intend. I had nothing but the best of intentions by using good music and by creating a friendly atmosphere and all this kind of stuff. And I certainly would never criticize someone who might have a different take on a Bible verse than I did. Right. I never did that. But a lot of people do. And it's very, very common nowadays, to the point where in the case of religion, as in your case, back when Jerry Falwell was doing the Moral Majority and Jimmy Carter sure. was running against Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter lost, and every lot of people like to say, well, he lost to Reagan because of the Iran, the hostage situation. Right. I don't think that was it at all. I think that somehow the Moral Majority had infiltrated the evangelical church so much that they began to substitute political power for spiritual reality. And it goes on to this day. You can still find a lot of Christian churches. Jerry Falwell used to say, we got to get people baptized, and then we got to get them saved, and we got to get them ready to vote. And nowadays they're saying, I've heard Christian pastors actually say, a Christian has got to go into this world with a Bible in one hand and a loaded gun in the other, because that will honor Jesus, wow. You know, that kind of thing. And when you find that, I'm not saying that if that's typical of where you're going to church or where what political party you're in or whatever, I am saying that when you see those kinds of signs, man, be careful, because those are cultic methodologies that are
right.
very common in use.
Jim, I don't want to totally pick on Christianity, because I think yeah. that it's fair to say that there are cults within Christianity and mm-hmm. there may be cultish behavior, but I don't feel that it is a rejection of the religion as a whole or even speaks to the majority of Christians mm-hmm. out there and churches out there. But it does exist, and I don't think we should bury your heads in the sand about it. What do you say, specifically coming from a Christian minister such as yourself?
Well, you know, not only a Christian minister, but I was a Congregationalist, which has its roots up in Massachusetts. Congregationalism goes back to the Puritans who first came over here. And we were taught in our history books, oh, the Puritans were far-seeing people who were looking for a city built on a hill. They were looking to establish something new. What they don't teach us is that the Puritans were forced out of what they were, and they were called a cult. They were called separatists, and they came here because, in effect, their cult was being pushed out of the mainline church of that day, which might have been good or might have been bad. History will have to decide that. All we can say for sure is that when they came over here and founded cities like Boston and places like that, they took over and started acting just like a cult. They started saying, if you're not part of our group, we're going to kick you out. And so they whipped Quakers, beat them out of town. The same thing with the Shakers. The same thing with the witches. Cotton Mather was a big leader in the congregational movement, in the Christian movement in Massachusetts. And he deliberately went to the Salem witch trials and stood there without saying a thing while these innocent women were being condemned, and some of them even burned to death and died dying horrible deaths. This was cultish behavior. It's built into our DNA, and it has come down. And now, since then, of course, things have changed, thank goodness. And it's not nearly that way. As a matter of fact, the denomination I belong to is a very a relatively modern denomination that was born in the fires of the civil rights movement of the 60s. But even still, you look back and realize that it had its roots in what was basically a cult, acting like a cult. And it's just built into the DNA of our system, and somehow we just have to be really, really careful. So when you say that there are cults within religion, within Christianity, yeah, and within Judaism, and within Islam, even within Buddhism. Buddhism, of all places, has some cult-like behaviors and followers. It's an insidious thing that can affect every single one of us if we're not really careful and constantly on the alert.
There's another kind of cult, and it seems to me that a lot of people have gone away from organized religion. And in some essence, that has left a void that people have filled with different things. People have filled it with science. People have filled it with politics, metaphysics, whatever it might be. And I think about politics today. Now, we talked about this off air. I come from the era back in my day, but it wasn't that long ago, by the way, that where you could have very politically principled people who were strong conservatives or strong liberals. For example, in my family, my grandmother was an FDR Democrat and my grandfather was Republican. And one would say to the other, I'm going to go cancel out your vote. But they made a family and had a great life together. Mm-hmm. Today, basically, and I am going to tee off everybody on the extremes. I mean this 100% equally to the right and to the left, because I see it on both sides. If you don't believe in A, B, C, D, E, you are a horrible human, and you shouldn't even exist.
Yeah,
I mean, that's basically what I'm hearing from both sides. So I don't want to hear, the right say, oh, it's just those guys on the left. And I don't want to hear the left say, oh, it's just those guys on the right, because it's both y'alls, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I came from the era, I remember Tip O'Neill, total liberal, FDR liberal, believed in liberal principles to his core. Then you had his arch nemesis, Ronald Reagan, who believed in conservative values to his core. But at the end of the day, they could sit and have a beer together and be civil to each other.
And tell Irish jokes and laugh and respect
and
the other person.
And then fight like hell the next day over a piece of legislation. Now, I'm not talking about if somebody is like a Hitler or they're practicing hate speech. Of course, you have to condemn those people. Mm-hmm. But within reasonable bounds, I just hate to see this ripping apart of our country. I don't think it's just the U.S., but I think it's particularly acute here. What about cults in politics these days on both sides of the aisle?
Well, unfortunately, I've caught some of that flack because people have heard me. I've mentioned some groups in my book, which a lot of people belong to. And I suppose just by putting them into the book, I've inferred that I considered them to be cults. I wasn't necessarily calling them cults as much as I was talking about their behavior. But whenever a political group, and like you say, left and right, they both do it, whenever they raise somebody up and begin to say this person can now do no wrong, and if this person says ABC, I'm going to believe ABC, even though I know that may be wrong, I'm still going to follow them. That is following a cult leader. And I don't care if it's a Republican or a Democrat. We have to really be careful of that. And you hit the nail on the head when you said it has divided us. I've caught some flack from people who, even though I haven't particularly labeled an organization or a person that they follow as a cult leader or a cult itself, I've had people hear that and imply it, and without even reading the book, contact me with some of the most vile things and putting up flags and putting up posters and signs and stuff like that, knowing that I'm going to drive by them just because, they, without even talking about it, without even finding out what I'm really about. And it is hard when it's come to that effect. We've had times where judges and federally appointed people and politicians are condemned and their families are threatened and their lives are threatened and they have to live their whole life in fear. just because people can't talk about this stuff anymore. That is the danger of cult. And what really scares me more than anything else, I think, about this whole thing is that I think it's gone past the point where it's just we can decide that the whole thing revolves around personalities. We've entered into a spiritual dimension. There seems to be something spiritually evil in the air. And I don't want to say it's demonic or anything like that. That's not what I'm about, but it feels like that. It feels like when a crowd gets together, they do things that an individual will never do. And they can be influenced and carried away. And afterwards you say, why did you do that? And they say, I don't know. Everybody was doing it.
Right.
A feeling just took over and I followed along. And, it scares me. Being a Christian minister, I often quote Christian scriptures. Even to be honest, I haven't been in a church for 15 years, but I still go back to my home texts. And I find these verses that just mean so much more to me now than they ever did before. For instance, when people talk about I'm afraid this is going to happen. I'm afraid what's coming on our country. There's a Bible verse in 1 John that says, "Perfect love casts out fear." In other words, the way to combat this fear that's in our nation is by loving one another, and instead we're hating one another.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Apostle Paul, or John again, said, you know, we deal not with, the Apostle Paul said, we deal not with flesh and blood, but with principalities and powers, you know, spiritual powers. Something has ticked off something in our American psyche that I see as a spiritual, moral, and ethical dilemma as much as an intellectual challenge. How are we going to solve this thing? I think it's going to go much deeper. And I don't want to be too negative, but it just seems like we're in farther than we've ever been before, at least in my lifetime. And I've been on the earth for more than seven decades, almost eight decades now.
Well, I would say that American adversaries have to love this. Mm-hmm. Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, they have to love the fact that the far left and the far right are at each other's throats, and we're becoming so divided. You know, it goes back to the united we stand, divided we fall, and boy, it sure feels like we're falling.
That's so apropos, especially after this last weekend with what happened in Tennessee and then the shooting in Kentucky and all that kind of stuff. You're absolutely right.
And then to me, it feels like, I always wonder how the things that went on, for example, in the Soviet Union, how did speech become so controlled, and you would be afraid to say what you thought within reason, you know, and now I understand. Understand.
Yeah.
So I'll say no more about that. I probably said too much about politics, but I do think that this cultist, our archetype does play over into our politics and what we're seeing today in the United States.
Yeah, it does. And when we look at some of these countries, they began with a cult-like following. I'm thinking about Mao Zedong, for instance. He had a cult-like following, and he pushed it into a countrywide religion. Same thing happened in Russia. Same thing happens from time to time in the United States when something happens like that. It's a normal human frailty that cult leader masters know how to manipulate, and that's the danger.
Well, right now I'm just sick of both political parties. I'll say no more. I'll say no more. They're not worth two hoots in hell. But not that I have strong feelings on it. excuse me. I'm sorry to use language.
No problem. And for anybody who does really is feeling strongly about anything that you've just said or I just said, I ask you, in love, to look inside and find out what button was pushed and say, are there feelings within you and that are responding to this, that are maybe over the top a little bit? If so, before you fly off the handle and send a terrible message to my contact page,
or mine.
Look within yourself, and I'm certainly not saying that I'm free of this either. We're all in the same boat, and why can't we just get along? You know,
yeah, I agree.
Is it that important?
And frankly, that's why I never bring, this is pretty rare, I never bring politics into the shows, because I believe that the things we talk about on these shows, the supernatural, you know, the afterlife, our psychic lives, all these things, ancient mysteries, it's all for all of us. It doesn't have an R or a D by its name. And I really feel that. And I am, you know, equally committed to putting out good shows for people that have more conservative or more liberal beliefs.
Right.
I want everybody to enjoy the shows. And let's get along on this common ground that we all share.
Yeah. And it's in keeping with what we just said, because when you talked about, you used the word metaphysical, you used the word supernatural. Those are both spiritual forces that exist, you know, metaphysical, above the physical, supernatural, you know, above or outside of the natural. We may be talking about these metaphysical and supernatural things. And if so, it might be bringing something within us that in this intellectual age in which we live, and we just don't want to believe in ghosts anymore. We don't want to believe in any of this stuff. We don't believe that supernatural things happen. Maybe we've gone too far, and maybe it's opened us up to dealing with feelings, intuitions that we know are real. And if that's the case, maybe this is the calm before the storm. Maybe this is going to be the cleansing storm that comes through and now that brings up all these metaphysical and supernatural ideas and say, wow, we had a brush with them. They must be real. And maybe we can start to look into them again and move away from this intellectual, technological world that we've created and look at reality with a capital R. It doesn't begin with either a D or an R. Reality with a capital R, that's above and beyond, something other, something outside of ourselves.
Now, I've always been very interested in the question of UFOs, but what is it, about 26, 27 years ago, there was a very striking case of, I think it was Marshall Applewhite, I think was his name,
in
Heaven's Gate.
That's right.
And, you know, again, I've been fascinated by UFOs and the prospect of potential ETs since I was a kid. And I think that it is something that is possible. And I think we're seeing more and more evidence that there's really something to it. But like anything, like religion, which can be, I think, unlike some people, I do believe religion can be a very positive force. You can take something too far. And I think with Heaven's Gate and their obsession with UFOs, and again, that leader that you talk about, the movement becomes about him and not about the subject. The case where it went too far. Can you talk about Heaven's Gate a little bit? Because I find that an interesting example of a cult gone very, very wrong.
Heaven's Gate is a fascinating study. And I have three or four other cults in the book that I talk about that are similar to that. But Heaven's Gate is a good place to begin, because here was a group of people who were convinced that the world was in trouble. They were convinced that the world was going down a bad path. And here was somebody who began to say, we need help. We can't solve this problem on our own. We need help. We can't do it and unless somebody comes back to help us. And this is at the basis of so much of this occultic activity. Christians say, for instance, the world is gone. It's too late. The only way to save it is for Jesus to come back and help us. Or some UFOs UFO followers will say, if the UFOs come, I'm hoping that they come so that they can save us from ourselves. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've been through what we've been through, and they will save us from ourselves. Frankly, I kind of hope that's the case myself. But like so many other things, first of all, we believe something, and then we try to figure out why. There are a lot of scientists right now, and one of them, Stephen Hawking, for instance, was saying, maybe it wasn't such a good idea to do what we did to try to, you know, get in contact with other aliens. Carl Sagan, on the other hand, when we sent up as soon as we were able to send up something that could break free of our particular section of the universe, we set out a complete gold record. Here's who we are. Here's how to play this record. Here's the sounds. Here's a man. Here's a woman. Here's everything we believe and all these different languages and everything else. Carl Sagan was saying, let's basically tell the universe, here we are, hi. And then we've got people like Stephen Hawking who are saying, maybe that's not such a good idea. Right. Maybe they're going to come back and it won't. Maybe they'll be antagonistic. So here's two people who have already come to an idea about what's going to happen based on their own human experience. Carl Sagan was an outgoing person who wanted to say, here we are. And Stephen Hawking was saying, maybe not so much, you know. And so when that happens, and it happened with Heaven's Gate, they became so obsessed with this idea of the only salvation of Earth is going to come when we communicate with UFOs, when we communicate with the people from outside, that in effect, it was a self-fulfilled prophecy, as you just said. They wound up taking their own lives, feeling this is the only way we can break free of this body, the only way we can break free of this plane of existence. We will go on to the next level, and there at the next level, we will find the peace that we have been searching so hard for in this level. If that is the case, then we have to be careful again. Are we saying that we really do believe in UFOs, or are we saying we're going to use that belief to accomplish a purpose? There's a difference. And it impedes science because, quite frankly, like yourself, I believe there's all kinds of evidence out there that we're simply afraid to really go after in a scientific way and try to find what the answers are. Carl Jung believed this at the same time. When Carl Jung, when his book became really popular about, he wrote a book about UFOs. And he said that people were seeing them because they were looking to the skies, because they were looking for salvation. It was almost the same time, just shortly afterwards, when Hal Lindsey came out with his book, The Late Great Planet Earth.
Yeah. That said, I read it in high school. Yeah. Remember?
That's right. That's about the same time that said Jesus is coming back. And here we have, from a religious standpoint, from a psychological standpoint of Carl Jung and the religion of Hal Lindsey, they were saying the same thing. We are not capable of solving our own problems. We have to look to something else outside of ourselves. And when we get so identified in that, we lose something. And the cultic methodology has taken over. And that's dangerous.
One last cult I'd like to talk to you about, and I'm so glad you wrote about this, the cult of scientism. Now, let me tell you, I am a great respecter of science. What we're doing today, we're basically, you had to, and people of a certain age will remember this, to do what we're doing today, you used to have to be Ted Koppel. Yeah. And you used to have a television network with millions of dollars of equipment and satellite. And we're both doing this from our home offices.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's amazing to me. And that's all because of science.
Yeah.
If you look at space exploration and medical advances, my goodness. My hats go off to science. I love science. I love the things that our scientists are capable of. But sometimes I think we're capable of so much that sometimes some people get this feeling that science is infallible or that what we say today is the science is settled. You know, the science is settled. I used to think that the science was never settled. It was always evolving. It was always changed. Now we're told the science is settled. And we've also got into this thing where, you know, skeptics, and there's two kinds of skeptics. There's the skeptic with the small s and there's the skeptic with the big s. You got to watch how you say that, but the skeptic with the big s. And, basically with the small s, it's like, show me the evidence, show me the proof. I'm somewhat skeptical, but I'm willing to listen. And then you've got the skeptic with the big s, which is, don't even bring this UFO stuff to me. Don't even bring this ghost stuff to me. Don't even bring your alternative theories of X to me because, you know, my mind's made up. I don't want to see anything. I don't want to hear anything. Yeah. And that to me is the problem. Can you talk about the cult of Scientism?
Yes. Science is riddled with cults. It really is. Let's take just one well-known example. Take the case of Hugh Everett. Hugh Everett was a brilliant physicist. He was the one that gave us the multiverse. He was the one that first began to preach the idea that just maybe, and he never said it was this way, but he said, we have to open ourselves to the possibilities. This is what the math says, that there is a multiverse, not just a universe. And we are living in a place with infinite number of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And every time we make a measurement or a choice or something, the universe splits and both realities become true. We can make a decision in our life and we are convinced that we made one decision and didn't make the other decision or didn't decide the other way. And so that's why our life was the way it was. Hugh Everett went on to say, no, both decisions were made and in another dimension or another reality, there's another you who made the opposite choice, and he's living in life based on that choice, but he thinks that was the only choice he could have made. Mm-hmm. Well, this was just totally against any kind of science, and the cult of science rose its ugly head, and basically they banished Hugh Everett. They said he was the guy who was leading the cult, and they kicked him out. Hugh Everett couldn't get a job teaching. He couldn't get a job in research. He had no money. His name was just, instead of attacking his ideas, they attacked his personality. They attacked his character, and Hugh Everett had to get a job working with the government, which probably was good because it was Hugh Everett working with the government that gave us the idea that may have got us through the Cold War, the idea of mutual assured destruction. That was him. And Hugh Everett died thinking he was a failure. He died still believing in what he had tried to teach, but he was so blackballed by his friends in the cults of science. And now Hugh Everett is considered a genius. After he's dead, they say, oh, maybe he had something there. And now they've carried on his work farther and farther, and there are people who just swear that Hugh Everett was done a terrible disservice, and there are still scientists and who don't believe in Hugh Everett's ideas that says, I don't care what the science says, it won't be true. That kind of thing goes on. We saw the same thing in archaeology. The idea of, you and I have talked in the past about Clovis first was for 100 years, the idea of the first Americans only were here 15, 16,000 years ago and invented the Clovis point and all that kind of thing. And there, that cult of archaeology held the field for 100 years. If you didn't go along with them, you couldn't get any money. You couldn't get a job. You couldn't get tenure. You couldn't get anything. And now that whole cult has just been fractured and destroyed because everybody knows now that who looks at the facts rather than the theology of Clovis first, that no, it's, people have been here a lot longer than that. There are these individual groups, which I consider to be cults in academia, in science, the cult of scientism, and they have to be feared there, just like they, and have to, we have to be careful about them. Anytime somebody sits there and says, I know the truth, they probably don't.
Yeah, very true. Well, you've given us a lot to think about today on American cults, cabals, corruption, and charismatic leaders. A very interesting and provocative conversation, I might say. And Jim, I guess the question is, where can people find this book and where can they find more about all of your work?
Oh, probably the easiest way is just go to my website, jimwillis.net. It's got all my books on there, and all I have to just click on them and you can find everything from reviews to Amazon links or the publishing links or anything else. Jimwillis.net. It also has on each page a link to my YouTube page and my Facebook page. What's even more important is it has a contact page. I love to hear from people. And so if you want to get in touch or comment or something, you and I can talk to each other in this way, but we we never know who's listening or who isn't. And this way it gives me an opportunity to actually become involved with people who may either agree or disagree with anything that we've said. So www.jimwillis.net, that'll take you to all the pertinent information.
The book is American Cults, Cabals, Corruption, and Charismatic Leaders. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Jim. Really good to be with you, as always.
A very interesting discussion and an important one, I think. And we thank you so much for tuning in to this edition of the program, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.